Money FM 89.3, the best of Saturday mornings. International News Review.
And we are back with Steve Okun and our International News Review. Steve, good morning. Welcome to the show. Let's start in the U.S. We've got our now officially... Sorry. Let's start with Putin in Russia. Vladimir Putin warning that he is ready to use nuclear weapons if his sovereignty is threatened. Of course, the Russian presidential election is this weekend. And so there's a lot of movement happening there. Should we be concerned?
Well, I'm going to be up, you know, all night tonight and all night tomorrow hitting refresh to see as the votes come in.
Has he won? Has he won?
Will Putin hold on?
Or? I've heard it might need a re-election. It might need a recount.
This is going to go down to the wire.
You're so funny.
Fifth term in office, 25 years of a hold on the Kremlin. Yeah. He's there through at least 2030. Yeah. So
I heard there's 110% voter turnout.
Vote early, vote often.
And so, so, yeah, of course you should be concerned. I mean, look, I mean, literally, you know, he's responsible for what? About 500,000 people who have died since he ordered the Russian invasion of Ukraine. You have now him threatening the use of nuclear weapons if he doesn't like the response from the West in terms of what happens due to that invasion of Ukraine. And it's also the threat he poses goes well beyond the borders of Ukraine. So this is a crisis we're probably not talking enough about, given everything else happening in the world, given, you know, the tragedy of what's going on in Gaza right now. But this is probably the biggest threat globally that we're facing outside of the climate crisis.
Completely agree. Couldn't agree more. I did a bit of reading. You probably know this already, Steve. China and Russia's bilateral trade hit a record $240 billion last year. That's number one. Number two, Russian natural gas is currently fueling Chinese households. And number three, Chinese cars are being driven all over Russian roads at record levels. In other words, the sanctions are not hurting him as much as they should be. Everything is continuing as normal. He's not going to surrender. He's not going to pull out. Ukraine is not going to surrender. Where does this end? It just keeps going.
And that's the question, which is why the West needs to support Ukraine, which it had been doing, but the Americans have basically stopped through some creative accounting. The Biden administration found another $300 million to send to Ukraine, but they're rationing ammunition. They're worried about people on the front from the Ukrainian side. You have, you know, the Russians who have, you know, and Putin in particular, he literally doesn't care how many Russians are going to die. And so when you're fighting someone like that, where do you end? And the thing is, if you give Putin a victory in Ukraine, what does it mean for the rest of the Baltics? What does it mean for when he wants to put potentially nuclear weapons into space? What is that going to mean for all of our communications globally? And it's certainly very troubling when you see China and Russia seemingly getting closer together, although I have questions about what this really means. And is Russia soon going to become a vassal state of China? And what's Putin's reaction to that going to be? So much to watch. But in the era of the polycrisis, you have to put this at the top of the list.
All right. Let's talk about a crisis in the U.S. that has an implication with Singapore, and that is the U.S. House of Representatives overwhelmingly passing a bill on Wednesday that would give the TikTok Chinese owner ByteDance about 6 months to divest the U.S. assets of the short video app or face a ban. This is a huge moment for the U.S. and for freedom of expression, freedom of speech.
It's also one of the few stories that affects every one of us in this room, including my daughter, Abby Rose. Right? It's TikTok.
I don't know how big this story is because and how big it will become. Because if you look at in terms of freedom of speech, because you don't have freedom of speech when there are national security issues at stake. And that is the question. Is TikTok a national security threat to the United States when there is ownership by the Chinese in terms of what's most critical to TikTok, which is the algorithms, which makes it so viral? So it's a national security question. It's not a freedom of speech issue. And that's the question that the Congress is debating. The House, which can't pass literally anything passed this 352-65, saying TikTok is a national security threat. And you have interesting information coming out where Secretary of State Blinken said, if TikTok is so great, why do the Chinese not allow it? Why should the Americans allow it?
My question here is, I have been trying to find exactly what everybody says the problem is. What is the data that TikTok collects that is so potentially damaging from a national security standpoint? Have you gotten down to the nut of that, Steve, to find out what really is an issue here?
There's two issues. There's one issue is privacy and one issue is disinformation. So your question goes to the privacy question. Now, look, everybody gets, you know, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, they all get, you know, pictures of people, and then you can use that to profile them and facial profiling and the like. The question is, if the Chinese government can ultimately get all of that American data, they get the facial recognition of 170 million Americans, what are they going to use that for? Can the Chinese security services use that against Americans in the U.S., or if they ever go to China? So that is why governments do not allow their officials to be on TikTok, because they don't want their faces and recognition to be accessed by the Chinese government. It's accessed by Facebook, it's accessed by Twitter, Instagram, et cetera.
Well, this is just it, right?
But it's who has the – who controls the information what can they do with it. It's the who.
I get it.
That's the key point I was going to bring up, Steve. Since playing devil's advocate – since Elon Musk has taken over Twitter/X, it has completely changed. The rubbish I get in my feed now, fed to me through algorithms. Just this week, I got one, a completely fake story about Lee Hsien Loong, completely fake, pushed into my feed. If that's not fake news, if that's not foreign interference, I don't know what is. What's the difference?
No, and it's the disinformation, which, Glenn, I think is a much bigger issue, which is the national security issue than the privacy issue. Because if you can push that information, whatever you want, you can run a disinformation campaign to 170 million Americans, that is a real power. And who controls the ability to do that? That is the question. And what the House is saying is that this can be ordered by the Chinese Communist Party into the United States. And you can't think of TikTok anymore as just a place where you do dance videos. I think it's something like 16% of Americans get their news from.
Right.
Well, would you allow somebody who's Chinese Communist Party affiliated to own the New York Times, the Washington Post, the LA Times, et cetera? Of course you wouldn't. And so are you going to treat a news source differently when it comes to foreign ownership because it's social media?
But a lot of that news that comes over is passed through by the New York Times. It's not coming from Beijing, the news, right? It's coming from domestic U.S. sources.
This is the question when it comes to a disinformation campaign. You can plant a article, you can plant a video, you can plant a news story, and then you can get that out to 170 million people. And the question is, do you want someone who can make that decision to own TikTok? The New York Times, sure, they can decide what they're going to publish or not publish, and that is a First Amendment right, and so long as it's newsworthy and doesn't defame, et cetera, they can do that.
Yeah.
But you have ownership restrictions because you don't want people who are not Americans, and other countries have this, Singapore no different, right? You don't want foreigners owning your news sources. TikTok is a news source. Do you want foreigners owning TikTok with the ability to let something go viral? That's the national security question. It's not as much privacy. Yeah. It's the disinformation.
Just briefly on that. So it's not again, devil's advocate, it's not just the disinformation, it's the kind of disinformation they don't like. Rupert Murdoch, foreign interference. Facebook, foreign interference. Cambridge Analytica, foreign interference.
I mean,
Trump got elected.
Hello.
They argue through Russian hackers. Brexit happened. They argue through Russian hackers. And sources like Cambridge Analytica, foreign interference, foreign interference, foreign interference. What's the difference?
So the question you're saying, Neil, is, so we can't control foreign interference everywhere.
No, I'm not
so we
saying
just
that.
Let it in. That's what that argument is, right? Cambridge Analytica can get in through Facebook, therefore the Chinese Communist Party owning 40% of ByteDance, which owns the algorithms, which TikTok runs on, well, then we let that go too.
I'm not saying that. I'm just asking a simple question. Why are we not having the same conversation about X about Facebook.
I think there have been, just because you haven't had, well, one, because X and Facebook aren't owned by foreigners. That's the main issue.
But
and
they're still contributing to this disinformation.
Much more so in terms of political content.
You, maybe not Twitter anymore or X, but
I
you
agree
certainly
that,
see
yeah.
Facebook trying to stop disinformation campaigns. With Abby Rose in the studio, we'll refer to, you know, Donald Trump as a shapeshifter, right? Talking, yeah. Throwing a Harry Potter reference. Because Donald Trump sees TikTok as a way for him to get the MAGA message out to voters that he wants to get out to. He has now shape-shifted away from saying that TikTok is a national security threat, which he wanted to get rid of as president, to now, we can't get rid of TikTok because it's not allowed and because Facebook is just as bad, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a national security threat or it isn't. And if there's other national security threats that are out there, you don't say, well, we're going to let this one go.
Just very quick domestic one that interests me. Many American businesses, large and small, are protesting this because they make their money through TikTok. Is that protest large enough to make American politicians worry?
It's possible. There's a lot that's going to go into this ban. There's, forget, you know, will we lose young voters if you're Democrat?
Because they are flooding the phone lines of their congresspeople, right?
Which proves the point that TikTok can drive U.S. policy. So in a way, this is making
But they're talking
the
about their
argument.
Business. If you're running a small bakery in small town America and your revenue comes almost entirely from TikTok videos, you're not going to want it banned, are you?
You're not going to want it banned, but the answer back to me, something's going to replace it. India banned it. India is doing quite fine without TikTok. The U.S. will do fine without TikTok because something will come and replace it. It may not be as good as TikTok from the virality of it and how it gets its messages out, but something will come and replace it.
All right. We got to move forward quickly. Biden and Trump have finally sealed their respective parties' nominations in terms of numbers in the primaries that were held this week. No surprise. Where do we go from here, Steve?
So the U.S. has had, you know, three elections, 2016, 2020, 2024. We've had a grand total of three candidates, Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, and Donald Trump. So we are getting a repeat.
And if that doesn't depress you, I don't know what.
Trivia question. When was the last time the same two candidates competed again? I couldn't remember.
Oh, the same two. It was 1956, Eisenhower against Stevenson had a rematch.
Right.
So it's happened before. One other time we've had a former president run again as well. I mean, Teddy Roosevelt did that. But yeah, it's not unprecedented, but very close to it. And now, so the battle is really beginning because now people are waking up to the fact that not like the three of us who pay way too much attention to this, right, and too early, but that this is really what's going to happen now. And so all of a sudden, Mike Pence, Donald Trump's vice president, just announced he will not endorse Trump because he does not believe he should be leading the country. In the Georgia primary, where Nikki Haley had dropped out, she still got 77,000 votes against Donald Trump. So Trump's going to have some serious issues. Of course, Biden has very serious issues given how low he is polling. So this is just going to be a slugfest. And we'll see. There's this battle between Trump and Biden. There's a battle on the left over Israel and Hamas. There's a battle on the right for what is the Republican Party dead, which Donald Trump Jr. said the old Republican Party is dead and it is a MAGA party now. And so it's really going to have battles on the left and right in addition to the one between the current president and the former one.
We had we're shifting gears now to our next story. We had a fascinating occurrence this past week. The Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer on Thursday called on Israel to hold new elections, saying that he thinks Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has, quote, lost his way and is an obstacle to peace in the region and the growing humanitarian crisis in Gaza. This is unprecedented, first of all, for a Jewish member of Congress to attack Israel, but then an American politician to call on Israel to have elections to get rid of their Jewish leader. I can't remember a story that has been quite as interesting as this on the political spectrum.
Look, he's not only a Jewish member of Congress, he is the highest...
The ranking,
He is the highest ranking Jewish lawmaker ever. Mm. He is the highest ranking Jewish official ever in the history of the United States, who has been lockstep with Israel. And for Chuck Schumer to come out, and he said there are four obstacles to solving the issue. The four obstacles are Hamas, far-right extremists in the Israeli government, the Palestinian Authority and Netanyahu. And for him to say that you're only you have to change those four dynamics and Israel has to have a new election. And so it really is unprecedented. You know, and you had talked about how the Americans talk about, you know, foreign interference in elections. Well, what more of a foreign interference in an election do you have than for an American politician to call for Israel to say you must have new elections or you really need to have new elections? And so how this is going to play out in terms of policy and what's going to happen in the Congress, what's going to happen politically in the Democratic Party, and what is going to happen in Israel, this is going to have massive reverberations.
Oh, foreign interference is fine if it's the Americans doing the foreign interference.
Yeah.
Well, I would say, no, there are plenty of Americans.
One man's rebel is another man's freedom fighter, right?
But on this point.
Are there Republicans who have said, no, it's not okay for what Chuck Schumer did?
Of course.
This is, yeah.
But on that point, it is a little bit frustrating, Steve, because I remember you sitting there after the terrible Hamas attack, and you said, following the Biden government's line, they have to be defended. Every nation has a right to defend itself. And I remember Glenn and I saying at the time, where do we think this is going to end? Netanyahu's comments, the far-right elements in his government, the nationalist approach, is it a bit much to act surprised now that it's gone the way it's gone? It was only ever going to go this way.
No, I would say we didn't know where it was going to go. And you had, at least quietly, the Americans saying, look, you have the right to defend yourself. Yes, it is in your interest and it's in the world's interest to get rid of Hamas. Yeah. But how are you going to do it? Think through it. And that is what Biden said when he went to Israel, the first U.S. wartime president, the first U.S. president ever to go to Israel in a time of war, to say, learn from our mistake, Israel. Have a plan for what is going to happen after the invasion, because we didn't in Iraq. And we made a mistake. Don't make the same mistake that we made. And Netanyahu is making that same mistake much worse by not having that plan. And the concern of, I think, of Schumer and of others in the U.S. is that Netanyahu is staying in power for one reason and one reason only, so that he doesn't go to jail. Because if he loses the presidency, he goes to jail. And the only way he stays in, and this is why Schumer said there were two issues. The issue was Netanyahu, and it was the far-right extremists in Israel, that he's playing to them to keep him in power. Mm. And so that is, I don't think you could have said a month ago or 2 months ago or, you know, in October 7th when this occurred, that this was inevitable, that Israel would go into Gaza and not try to protect civilians as much as it should have done.
Yeah. Meanwhile, while he plays politics, more women and children.
Yeah, 30,000 plus people are dead because of this.
Close to 40,000 now. Yeah.
Close to 40,000. Yeah. And I mean, look, Netanyahu has been clear, very clear. He's like, we are doing this until we get rid of Hamas. Yeah. So what did anybody expect? Honestly, I think we could and should have seen that, in October, November.
I mean, we were saying it in this room.
Yeah.
You could not have predicted that he would have had, that Netanyahu would not have had the type of balance that war calls for, that you have to try and protect civilian lives while you advance your military purposes. This is not certainly, and I think if President Biden had known this, 6 months ago, it would have been different today. But this has gone in a different direction that was potential, but not, I wouldn't say foreseeable. Yeah. At that stage. And now we have to fix it. Well, again, we'll agree to disagree on the foreseeability.
Right. Okay. We got to move on very quickly. You had a comment this week on LinkedIn about Singapore's Balancing Act.
Yeah.
Talk to us about that. What is that? What is Singapore currently having to balance? I mean, there's a lot of things, but
this relates to the U.S. election. And the question is, how should Southeast Asia be preparing for either a Trump 2.0 and a Biden 2.0? And the answer, which is a little bit surprising, because in the U.S., we see stark differences if Trump wins or if Biden wins. We see real change in the U.S., whoever wins. And the MAGA people say the country will continue to go down the tubes if Biden stays in. And the Biden people say if Trump wins, we're going to lose our democracy. So you see such stark differences. And in Singapore, it says, we're kind of unperturbed. You know what? Either way, that the U.S. is not going to be perfect. Look, whether it's reliable or not is moot, is Bill Ahari, the former perm sec at MFA, told me. He said the U.S. is indispensable, and that the U.S. U.S. is not new in having a penchant for unilateralism. It is going to put America first, and it deals with countries transactionally. Trump is disruptive. Biden is polite. But at the end of the day, it's still transactional.
But what I found, I read your piece, very good piece, but what I found depressing about it, every time you do a panel or a discussion in Singapore and the region and you do a quick poll, they all seem to think Trump is going to win. Why is that?
I think, one, they may see that it is a – they're doing an over-reliance on polling right now, and that in the U.S., you look at the polls in all of the swing states, and Trump is up in every swing state. But Americans are probably paying – some Americans are paying less attention to the election than Singaporeans are. I mean, because of that, they don't understand that it is too early to be making predictions right now, and that this race is going to – it can go either way. If it is a referendum on Biden, he will lose. But if it is a choice on Trump, he will lose. And so much is happening that is out there that we have to see how it play out at the end of the day.
Steve, we got to leave it there, but thank you. We were going to talk about Kate Middleton's photo shopping, but maybe we can do that next week. Thanks, Steve. We'll talk to you soon.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at audio.sg or download the audio app. That's AWEDIO, audio at the App Store and Google Play.